Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, www.mecu.com. We are here now with Marta Mossberg, who is a visiting fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute and nationally syndicated columnist, Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University, a one-time city council candidate. You never know, he might be another time city council candidate. We'll see what the future brings. Good to have you both in the studio.
Hey, good
Thanks
to be here.
We're not in the studio, Marta. Good to have you with us. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can also log into our Facebook page, tweet us at Mark Steiner, your thoughts on some of the local issues we're going to cover very quickly. Just a quick thought from you all in this half hour we have before we hear from Heather Mazier and her campaign now to legalize marijuana as one of her campaign platforms. There was an article in the front page of the New York Times today that struck me. I read it and I just started laughing to myself, even though it's not funny, that all members of the U.S. Congress, Republicans and Democrats, can take advantage of the fast track with the Affordable Care Act, make sure that they have a special 800 number just for them to get any gold premium they want, and to cut through bureaucracy to be taken care of. We can argue about
The
website and Barack Obama and Sibelius and other things like that, which I think were going to be things of the past very shortly. And whether you agree or not agree with ACA in total or in toto or even as a bill, that to me is an outrage. Mm-hmm. Martin Mossberg, that to me is an outrage.
Completely. I mean, that's just sort of how Congress operates, is that it was exempted for a long time from Obamacare, and now that it has to be a part of it, it gets special access. How does that? You know, I don't think that the American public will be too happy with that.
It also exposes the lunacy of a lot of the opposition toward health care for all, really. I mean, we know we started from a perspective of why not have nationalized Medicare. Okay, it would be easy, a single-payer system. There was a lot of fight about that. We know that Congress members have government health care anyway. So, again, these are nonsensical fights that we've been in, and it delays progress.
I just wanted to throw that out there, folks. Well, I will try to link to that article on our website and our Facebook page so you all can read this piece in the New York Times. It's just maddening to see that especially people who are opposing ACA are not taking advantage of it in ways that the rest of us cannot. That's just an upsetting.
Well, no, it's kind of like they get special access there. They are allowed to do insider trading. They can do,
right.
The list is almost endless of the benefits that members of Congress have compared to the rest of us.
So let's talk about some local things here. Folks, join us at 410-319-8888. So we're always hearing about how Maryland is number one in the nation with public schools. We hear that all the time. And in some ways, there are some great schools in the Maryland public school system, incredible schools, in Baltimore City, Montgomery County, throughout the state. But that part of the reason that we finished so high on the national reading test is because we cut out the 7 points higher for fourth graders, 5 points higher for eighth graders, is because we excluded kids in special ed from the reading tests.
Mm-hmm. No, that was this was just a bombshell when this came out, especially because the state, I mean, this is something that Governor O'Malley is now, you know, that was the first thing he mentioned at his speech at the Democratic National Convention. You know, it was like, welcome from Maryland, you know, the place where we have number one schools. I mean, this is something he always, always talks about. And, you know, we spend a ton of money in Maryland to get these great schools. But when you look at how, you know, the fact that we've achieved this because we are basically cooking the books, it's appalling.
honestly, only thing I would disagree with is I wouldn't really call it a bombshell, to the extent that those of us who are familiar with the school system, my wife has been a teacher in the public schools, friends of mine as well, know that some of the pressures that many of the schools are under. And so whether it's this experience or even before with some of the, you know, not to say this is cheating, but cheating scandals where administrators and teachers feel under undue pressure to have good scores, to show this progress. And part of it is through exclusion of some of these students who are learning disabled.
And it's not just some.
Yes, a huge percentage.
I'll read the line. This is Liz Bowie's piece in the Baltimore Sun that I'm reading from. that Maryland excluded 66% of fourth graders with disabilities from the reading test, far higher than national average of 16%.
Exactly.
Second highest rate of inclusion after Georgia.
Right.
Special ed students.
Which is 32%.
Right. Right. So we're double that.
We're double. I mean, double that. I mean, just, I, so who answers to this? I mean, who needs, is it the Secretary of Education? Is it the governor? I mean, is it, it's not necessarily something that was done illegal. I mean, it's not an illegality, but it calls into question.
Right. It's sort of a technicality, but decisions are made at the school level. And so there's a lot of latitude in schools in terms of who takes the test, what type of test they're taking, or they're doing.
But clearly people who are sitting at the State Department of Education can see how many test scores are coming in from how many schools and know what percentage of students that it is in that school because they know how many kids are in the school, correct? Mm-hmm.
Right, and they knew about
not,
all of this.
Unknown.
They never highlighted this. So, of course, when they say we have this number one ranking, I mean, I wonder if Education Week knew, which does those rankings, knew anything about this. And I mean, I don't know how this news became news recently, but this is something obviously that officials had knowledge of, but just didn't want to disclose because it wouldn't fit their narrative.
Right.
Well, and it's what the NAEP is who puts out the nation's report card have asked in schools not to do this, but it would be very curious to follow up on this in the next several weeks to see what the bottom line of this and where it ends up. Jason, go ahead. What were we going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I mean this issue to me just raises you know what we were talking about earlier too is this whole standards based you know No Child Left Behind way of accountability and teaching. I think it forces school systems to do things like this because you have to keep the numbers up. You have to teachers are evaluated on this one size fits all approach as our students, and with Common Core none of that changes. So I think we're going to see more of these problems down the road. Not, I mean, this is a statewide structural thing, but with the cheating on the tests and other issues, none of this is going to change with the new standards.
Well, if not tomorrow, then the week after next, we have to come back to this and bring some people on to actually talk about this in some depth with us here on the air,
right.
Yeah.
who are in charge and responsible for this, and see why, and clearly raise the issue when we get to the Annapolis Summit in January.
Right. You know, one thing I will say, it's interesting you bring up, the Common Core. And again, that's a whole other conversation. But what's interesting is even the state, participating in that. If we wanted to be even commensurate with the other states in the nation, then we would have even more of our students taking this test. So we kind of pick and choose where we want to be in compliance.
Mm-hmm. Folks, join us. What do you think? Your kids are going to these schools all through the state of Maryland, all through our listening area. 410-319-8888. Does it make you, shrug your shoulder, go, oh, well? Is it an outrage to you about how we're handling these test scores? What to say about your feelings, your ideas about your own child's education? 410-319-8888. Join us here with those thoughts and ideas. And then and Baltimore County Council. 6-1 was the vote, 6-0, mm-hmm. with Ken Oliver, the lone African-American council person, not voting, recusing himself, whatever mm-hmm. reason. I'm not quite sure why he recused himself, but...
I know he spoke against it, so why would he recuse himself?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why he did that. But they voted not to take the state funding from Houses for America to build 45 townhouses and 5 single homes for low-income people in southeast Baltimore mm-hmm. In Middle River.
Mm-hmm. Look,
John Bullock.
Unfortunately, this is not a new story. Even when I teach this to my students, we look at the history of Baltimore City and Baltimore County. We know that Baltimore County has tended to zone in such a way that it excludes affordable housing. That's been an issue for quite some time, and this is just another example of it. People will, and some of the residents and the representative from that particular area talked about the concerns about crime. And a lot of that is really code talk. I mean, some of it is around issues of class. A lot of it is around race as well. I do think it's interesting that Ken Oliver recused himself or abstained from the vote. Again, even if he had voted against it, it would have been everybody against this project, and I think a lot of attention would have been upon him. There still is attention upon him, but we know that there's also coded language as it relates to race when we're talking about housing, talking about transportation, especially in areas that are not as diverse as they possibly could be.
Let us open the phones. Unless you want a quick thought, Marta, I'm going to open the phones after that.
Sure, that's fine. I mean, just basically, I mean, when you look at the development in the city and the county, I mean, it's going towards these big marquee projects that make the council members or the mayor look good. This isn't something that is helpful to their image or to the county. So, again, it's I think that the little people are generally excluded from development.
And we certainly don't, the little people, as you put it, Marta, living too close to the water, that should be reserved for only people with lots of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I include myself in the little people.
So we all do, I think. 410-319-8888. Because little people in this country is a broad spectrum of people. Mm. I mean, it's, you know, it's a very broad spectrum of people, from people who are really poor to people whose incomes may be in the low six figures but are, as a combined family, people are all struggling in this country to get by on in many ways. So,
indeed.
410-319-8888. Ryan in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Ryan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Actually, it's Brian.
Brian, I'm sorry. It says Ryan on my screen. Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
That's okay. Not a problem. Going back to the education piece and the exclusion of a special education student
sure.
from the test score. The bigger question for me is that 66% that's being excluded. Who are they? And we know why they're being excluded, because their scores are not good, which means they're not able to read. What is happening to those students? What about them? Why? What do we do to fix the system so we can include them, so that their scores are worthy of being reported?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really great question, Ryan. I think it goes to the heart, John Bullock, of how we even identify what special needs kids, who they are, why mm-hmm. they're even in that track, mm-hmm. what their disabilities are, how we define that,
right.
how we address those kids. I think that is the subtext to this that is almost more important than the fact that they were not involved in these tests.
Right. And then also, what's the long-range plan? I mean, again, what we see oftentimes is that, you know, students have needs and they continue to be unaddressed and they get pushed along and they're sort of ignored and say, okay, well we're still meeting, you know, our progress as it relates to performance. But then these students are passed on and are functionally illiterate. And that makes it very difficult for them to be successful in high school. Many of them drop out, not because they can't do the work or aren't able, but they're not given the preparation to do so.
I'd like to know what is a special needs, though? Is this a child with ADHD? Is it someone with learning disability? Is it all of the above? Is it, because I think the article talks about how each child has an individual plan and that the school has to follow with that plan. So some of the children are allowed to take tests through orally versus having to write them, and that doesn't fit with, you know, the national standards. So it'd be interesting to find out why they have this special plan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, there's such an overdiagnosis, and at least Indeed. In my opinion, of ADD and ADHD in the United States, and that's infected the school system as well because of the special treatment that they receive mm-hmm. within the school system as a result.
Then one stat I'll read before we go to break right here. Again, in Liz's article from the Sun was 44% of fourth graders and 43% of eighth graders in Maryland achieve proficiency in reading compared to 34 and 35 nationally. Well, that's higher, but that's still, you know, that means that the majority of students in our public school systems mm-hmm. don't achieve proficiency in reading. That's the real story.
Right.
That's the story here.
And it speaks to class. It speaks to early childhood preparation and education.
We're taking a very brief break. We want to hear your thoughts. 410-319-8888. Talk a bit more about the county council, what happened there. Talk a little bit about e-cigarettes. And the madness of people banning them all over the place. And also go back to this issue of Don't Leave Me in the Inner Harbor if we have time. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts, join us here. I'll be right back with our guests, Marta Merzberg and Dr. John Bullock. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back to our local news roundup here. I want you to join us at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Marta Merzberg, visiting fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, a nationally syndicated columnist, Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University, and you, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts. Maybe you live in Baltimore County. I'd like to know what you think, even if you don't live there. About what the county council did in denying the right to build these homes. I just, to me, I guess there's so much going on. But the fact that there's not kind of a more collective outrage on the part of people around things like this, and what it just says about who has power and a voice in places like Baltimore County and who doesn't. Developers have lots of power in Baltimore County to develop what they want.
But then when it comes to things like affordable housing, it's always, in theory, I like the idea, but not my backyard. This NIMBYism takes over. And one of the things that's kind of glaring about this project is we're not even talking about, you know, local funds that had to be distributed. We're talking about state funding. You're rejecting state funding for this project. And then what does it look like? We're talking about 45 townhouses. We're talking about 5 single-family homes. Not something that's extremely huge and not some, you know, high-rise public housing project. But again, something that was going to be done in a very decent and equitable fashion, but it still winds up being rejected.
Yeah, I mean, it just to me, the bigger objection is just how development is done in general in the city and in the county. I mean, Brian Sears has done such a good job of covering all the development, which should be scandals, I think, in Baltimore County, as far as, you know, how politically connected you have to be in order to get anything done. And it's always the case that this handful of people get all the big projects, all the subsidies, and everyone else has to pay the bills. So it doesn't make sense to me. It's not fair.
I agree. I think that again is one of the ways it's so interesting to me. No matter what some of our political viewpoints are, there are many places that we come together, and one of those places we come together are things like what a real true democracy means: who has a voice, who doesn't have a voice. And I think that's a very critical piece to all this. 410-319-8888. I just asked this question about the e-cigarette bans that are taking place. I mean, I can see a teacher saying, no, you cannot smoke an e-cigarette in a class. I can see schools saying, no, that's not happening. For lots of reasons. For, you know, the idea that what it may lead to with real cigarettes, to the kind of disruptive kind of nature of it in a classroom. But what do we think about this, Martin, about the banning of e-cigarettes, and which county was the bandit that said
Prince George's? It was PG County that was thinking about it.
Right.
It was, you know, I'm against it. I mean, I can't stand smoking. I hate being around smokers.
Me too.
And I've been around these e-cigarettes as well, and I don't like the vapor is kind of annoying, but it seems to me that they haven't proven anything. I mean, the fact that they're doing a $19 million study, that made me laugh. I was like, who is spending $19 million studying these things? But it just seems like, you know, it's preemptive on a personal choice issue that, you know, it seems like it should be up to the person, not to the county government at this point in time.
Right. And I think also we think about, you know, again, like I said, this hasn't really been regulated, hasn't really been studied. There isn't a lot of research behind it. So I think there's an assumption by many that it is safer, and there might be an assumption, but it is not borne out by the data. And you see this large study, $19 million. Again, we see that universities and foundations, other private industries are interested in this type of research, particularly for this industry that is also growing. So there's also money behind this industry as well. So I think that also plays a part into you know, the investigation.
I mean, the e-cigarettes, basically, it's just delivering nicotine, correct?
Correct.
In vapor form. So you're getting this kind of high without burning tobacco products. And the issue, it seems to me, is that so many kids are now using these things. And there's just been exponential growth in how many teenagers are trying them and using them as well as smoking. So, I mean, anything that's putting the drug into your body, obviously, is not a good thing. But you know, it's banning it just seems like kids are going to get it anyway. So if that's your point, it just seems like it's a futile one.
One thing to be clear about the ban, though, it is for bars and restaurants. So it's not, you know, overall, but again, just like similar to, you know, any other smoking ban that really affects the bars and the restaurants.
And I think that it would be, since I have immediately do not trust large private industry to tell us the truth anymore than I trust the governments to tell us the truth.
I don't either.
So I would want to know from studies what these things do to us. How many years do people smoke cigarettes with saying, you know, with people trying to deny that there's any problem with smoking tobacco, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so what are the health hazards involved with using an e-cigarette? I think people have we have a right to know that. I mean, maybe there's none.
But we should know.
We should know. Maybe there's none at all. Because they're saying the research shows there may not be any. It's just pure nicotine, and nicotine without all the other horrible derivatives that destroy your lungs. Who knows?
I mean, it's kind of fascinating that there is so little research on it because they have been around for a while. It's not like they just started making them yesterday. I mean, they, you know, they've been around for what, 10 years?
Right. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Yes.
I mean, even the big guys are getting into it, so you know that they've done research on it. I mean, but the public doesn't have any information on it, other than probably knowing it's not good for you, but that you want to get that high. So, like, you know,
why
people drink.
I don't know about the high, but I think
well,
some people
high, but I mean, you know, the nicotine reaction.
Right. I didn't think it made you high.
But I know how in some ways, it's marketed as a way to also get to kick the habit of smoking and to get away from it. And so I think some people do see it as that bridge, but we'll see.
They are made of nicotine, water, and glycerin. And a lot of them have these artificial flavorings, vanilla and other flavors, and chocolate, and so what those might be doing to you, inhaling these chemical flavorings, I don't know what they do to your body. People need to know that, right? So I'm not rushing out.
It's just a dumb idea, but of course it makes a lot of money, and so of course the government's going to have to get involved in it at some point. It's probably not worth it at this point in time.
Yeah, we were out, and somebody was smoking one. I said, "Can I just take a taste? I was curious what it was like." You know?
Did you?
Yeah, I want to see what it was like. I said immediately, I don't want to do that one again. That was just yuck.
Was it like strawberry flavor?
It was like some flavor. It was just really pukey. Couldn't stand it. So 410-319-8888. Do you smoke e-cigarettes? I don't know. Let us know. Maybe you're smoking your e-cigarette while you're not taking the reading test. 410-319-8888. Let us know. The other issue, we talk about development. That's part of there's a debate brewing here in Baltimore that should spill over into the county surrounding us as well, one would hope. They're talking about making over the Inner Harbor. At first glance, it's difficult to argue against kind of wanting to make over a tourist location that makes the city beautiful. And yeah, sure, we should rehab it, but it raises all the other issues of what we're not doing and where we're not spending our money and who else is. And people saying we have to talk about the human rights of the workers down there. We have to talk about as food and water watchers down there saying you can't even eat the crabs off the pier. You shouldn't be eating because because they're dangerous and also because the levels are down because of the pollution and we're not dealing with the real issues. So, what are your thoughts on all this?
You know, with as far as redoing the Inner Harbor and Inner Harbor and all the high traffic areas, it still makes me so angry that no money was spent from stimulus on redoing the water pipes in Baltimore City,
right?
You know, or fixing the railway tunnels, as you know,
right.
And when we saw with the accident, there's so many major infrastructure projects that are critical to the success of Baltimore in the long term and the surrounding area, and none of those things are addressed. It's just these kind of big, you know, presence that make Baltimore look like a national, you know, or international city or a destination when the rest of it's crumbling. And that makes no sense to me. It's a very short-term decision.
And rebuilding tunnels might have resolved the CSX truck issue that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. In terms of building this terminal, people don't want these trucks going through the neighborhood. Well, if we spent some tens of millions of dollars rebuilding those tunnels, mm-hmm. so the trains can get through it, that would be a place to put infrastructure money, it would seem.
Right. I mean, I agree with the idea of spending more, or the reality that we need to spend more on infrastructure. But also, this is not even a new issue. We're talking about over 100 years where, you know, some of these things could have been addressed and would have been less costly to do so then. The other part of it is I fully understand why the city looks at some of these big ticket items in terms of the city's reputation and development. But at the same time, and I think there's this push to get it done so quickly. But there's a need sometimes to take some time and ask questions rather than just trying to plow through with a project and get it done and get it on the books when there are some serious issues from the community perspective that really need to be addressed.
I mean, look at the Hilton Hotel.
Right.
That's just a shining example of a city getting involved in a project it had no business getting involved with. And now it's losing millions of dollars, and taxpayers are going to be on the hook for it. I mean, the city does not know how to run a hotel. And on top of that, it wants to expand the convention center. So, and then in this hope that it's going to bring more people in and more hotel nights. But this has been going on. I mean, if you read the papers from the 1990s or the 1970s, the Baltimore development people were saying the same thing then as
right.
they are now, and nothing ever changes, and it's just this war for conventions that no one is winning across the country, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Marta Marsberg, it's always good to have you with us, visiting fellow of the Maryland Public Policy Institute, and a needle, a thorn in the side from the right is a good thing, and I appreciate you being there.
Thank you, Mark. John, nice talking with you.
You too. Dr. John Bullock, a thorn in the side from the left, good to have you with us as well.
Always good to be here.
We're going to take a very brief break and take a little music break here and come back. And we're going to hear from Delegate Heather Mazier, who's running for governor, and the public policy plan she just put out about legalizing marijuana. And after the Thanksgiving holiday, folks, we're going to come back and be reinterviewing all of our gubernatorial candidates, meeting lieutenant governor candidates and more. But we're going to hear from Heather Mazier and her platform to legalize marijuana right now.